I'd like to say a few words about the kinds of spies that the British were sending into the Far East under the cover of commercial or intellectual scientific activity. Colin Mackenzie, who was operating between 1754 and 1821, was a British agent who mapped India. He was the Surveyor General of India and an art collector and orientalist who produced many of the first accurate maps of India, but along the way collected valuable British intelligence about the lay of the land. In 1826, James Lewis, who had deserted from the army, changed his name to Charles Masson and passed himself off as an American traveling in South Asia. Charles Masson, a.k.a. James Lewis, hid out from the British army and came across a large city of bricks in the Punjab and wrote about it much later in a romanticized account of modern Pakistan. An East India Company soldier and explorer, Masson was the first European to discover the ruins of Harappa near Sahival in Punjab, Pakistan. London's man in Kabul provided details prior to the First Anglo-Afghan War and was a pivotal player in that period. Alexander Burnes, perhaps the most famous of all British spies of the era, posed as an American engineer on a scouting expedition for commercial and strategic potential, areas not yet under British control. Burnes managed to spy his way all the way to Kabul, Afghanistan, while collecting ancient coins and tracing the route of Alexander the Great to India. He was nicknamed Bukhara Burnes for his role in establishing contact with and exploring Bukhara, a further outpost of the Russians and a direct threat to British interests in the region. In 1849, Pakistan fell to the British and the Punjab fell under British control. At that time, in 1853, Sir Alexander Cunningham, the father of Indian archaeology, was following up on Masson and Burnes to explore Indian and Pakistani ruins, especially at Harappa. Along the way, of course, he found a break from his scientific activities in order to collect invaluable intelligence regarding Russian dispositions in that area. Among this motley crew was also an Irishman, James Pottinger, who nursed the illusion that he could pass himself off as an Islamic mullah. Later, he would become the first governor of Hong Kong. James Abbott was fiercely and aggressively patriotic, and being greatly concerned with status and protocol, tended to wear full dress uniforms at every opportunity, even in the most remote spots of Central and Southern Asia. He called the Khan of Khiva Old King Cobb, and the latter remained convinced that his debonair guest was none other than a Russian spy. In fact, Abbott was a British spy. Yet Abbott, like so many explorers, expected and even demanded hospitality from the very groups on which he was spying, even when his covert operations were blindingly transparent. The Russians were not to be outdone. Among the most famous Russian explorer coom spies of the era was Nikolai Przewalski, a Russian geographer of Polish origin and explorer of Central and Eastern Asia. Although he never reached his final goal of Lhasa in Tibet, he did travel through regions unknown to the West, such as northern Tibet, modern Qinghai, and Sungaria. In 1870-73, Przewalski managed to explore China and Tibet. Along the way, he surveyed over 7,000 square miles, collected and brought back with him 5,000 plants, 1,000 birds, 3,000 insect species, as well as 70 reptiles and the skins of 130 different mammals. So we can see how under the cover of scientific expeditions, many Russian and British agents were able to perform services both to science and to their nation's covert intelligence services simultaneously. According to historian Tobias Richter, between 1850 and the end of World War II, several key figures of Near Eastern archaeology worked as spies, informers, and intelligence operatives for their respective governments. They lent their expert knowledge of Middle Eastern culture, traditions, geography, language, and history to the political needs of their governments, creating a lasting legacy.